Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Bill Federer, one of my favorite guests, one of my favorite authors, one of my favorite public speakers. And Bill, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, great to be with you.
Now, you are from St. Louis. You've lived there most of your life. Tell us about Ferguson and some of the unbelievable details that seem to be coming out about those riots.
Well, the first is that most of the people rioting are not from St. Louis. They are coming in from other parts of the country, and they're being brought in intentionally to create the crises. It goes back to the Saul Alinsky strategy of creating the crisis so that the government has an excuse to take power. George Soros has been found out that he has funneled about $30 million into front groups to organize these people to riot. Back in May, the rioters had actually demonstrated in front of the George Soros front group's office demanding to be paid, that they said they were promised $5,000 if they would riot and set Ferguson on fire, and they did their part and rioted, and they want their money. And so they started a cut the check hashtag campaign that began to spread across the internet. And so it's a rent-a-mob. And then the very same people went from St. Louis to Baltimore, Maryland. And the idea is that you go to cities where there's a Democrat governor, Democrat mayor, and they tell their police to stand down and give the people space to riot and trash the city. And then the response is that the local police departments are inadequate. We need to federalize and let the federal government take over all the local police departments. The problem with this is it's just a backdoor into having a standing army. And our founding fathers were very much against the federal government having a standing army on the soil, on the ground. And so a little background for those not familiar.
Wait, before you do that, can you go ahead and explain what do you mean by standing army?
Federal government is prohibited from having an army carrying arms standing on the street corners of the city. They're to be on their bases, and they're to be deployed over in other countries, but they're not to have an army that's functioning and operable. Why? Because the founding fathers realized that that's how tyrants control countries. And so it was this idea that when the army is amongst the civilian population, they are to be disarmed. And it's the local police departments that are responsible to keep order.
But what about the National Guard? I mean, where would they fit in that scheme?
The National Guard is under, obviously, that's a movement away from what I just described.
Okay.
But it's one of the steps. First, you have the state militias and the state, the guard that's under the individual states. And then, ultimately, the idea to protect the borders. So you need somebody that's armed to protect the borders. But it's always been this posse comitatus that they're not to be an armed military keeping control of the population. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the British Army was in Boston and was going house to house, and they had what's called writs of assistance, where they were authorized to arrest anybody on any suspicion and confiscate their property indefinitely. And the founding fathers in America said, no, we don't like this. We want to, the British Army would go up to your house and say, we're going to use your house as our barracks. And they would quarter in the house. And the people would have to live in the basement or the attic or a barn and let these people live in their bedrooms and use their house.
Oh.
And that's when they stood up and were throwing rocks at the British soldiers. And the British fired into the crowd and killed a bunch. And that's called the Boston Massacre. And so when America's founders set up the government, they wanted to make sure that that would never happen again. And so there's not to be a standing army that it would be keeping, you know, standing on the street corners of the cities with their guns over their shoulders and controlling the civilian population.
All right. So now going back to the Ferguson and the rent-a-mob, can we verify this for sure? And was it $5,000 a month that some of these people were promised? I mean, that's a lot of money.
Oh, the news reports was it was just a one-time payment of $5,000.
Oh, I see.
But they would. I ran for Congress several times.
Yes, in St. Louis.
In St. Louis, and one of the things that was sort of common knowledge was what they called walking money. So on election day, people from the opposite party that I was in were known for going into inner cities, going up to people saying, here's $20, here's a name, go into that polling place and say that you're this person and vote for the candidate that we want you to. And they would take a name of somebody who had died or moved away, but their name was still on the registered voter list. Then they would take that same person, they'd busload them to another polling spot. They'd all get out, and they'd have a different name. And they said, well, there was a push by the party that I belong to say, well, let's make them show their IDs. And the other side said, no, that would intimidate them. And so many reports of the same person going to numerous different polling spots with different names. They said, we want to videotape them, and we can compare the videos and see if it's the same person going into one polling place after another. And they said, no, you're intimidating the voters. You're a racist if you want to do this. And one thing after another, until finally it's like, throw your hands up. Here we have, you know, Eric Holder was suing states if they simply wanted to verify that the person standing their voting was who they said they were. And they said, no, that's intimidation. But the idea was you go out and you pay these people to do this. And so that is where they've taken it another step, saying, well, we'll pay you to riot. And they would call them. It goes back to a couple people in history.
Machiavelli.
Machiavelli lived 500 years ago in Italy. Italy was a bunch of city-states, Venice, Genoa, Naples, Florence, Siena. And these city-states all had armies and navies and fought. And Machiavelli thought if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop the infighting. So they write a book. He wrote a book called The Prince, where he advocated the end justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end that any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal. And so the scenario is if the prince conquers a city, the people would hate him. But if that prince paid these criminals to kill cows, burn barns, set buildings on fire, smash windows, cause riots in the streets, that the people would cry out for help, and the prince would march into town with his army, and everybody would praise him as a hero. And so it's Machiavellianism, where you create or capitalize on a crisis to consolidate control. And that inspired someone in Germany named Hegel. So when Napoleon came and conquered Prussia, a German kingdom, very easily afterwards, Frederick, the king of Prussia, said, we can't let that happen again. We need to strengthen the state. The philosopher that backed him was Hegel. He said the state is God walking on earth. And Hegel came up with a plan to consolidate power called dialectics, Hegelian dialectics. It's a triangle. One corner is a thesis, the opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis, and the top corner is a synthesis. Sounds complicated, but it's not. In other words, you start at the first corner of the triangle, the thesis, you create the opposite. You create a problem that is really bad, and then everybody is relieved to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And you do this over and over again till you move from freedom to bondage, from a people ruling themselves to a dictator. And so Karl Marx improved on it and said, well, let's send labor organizers, community organizers, agent provocateurs, agitators into areas and communities to create a crisis, to create antithesis. And when there's blood in the streets and random violence, everybody says, please, someone with a strong arm, come in and restore order. And that's how 45 countries fell to communism. They would organize the proletariat against the bourgeois, the working class against the business owners, the blacks against the whites, the Muslims against the Christians, the Catholics against the Protestants, the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo and Rwanda. They really don't care who the two sides are or what the issues are. Their goal is the destabilizing crisis that causes people to cry out for them to come to the rescue and restore order. And so it's, this Machiavellianism, this Hegelian concept, well, that actually inspired someone named Saul Alinsky, who lived in Chicago, rode around with Al Capone's hitmen, saw how all you had to do was kill a few people and the whole neighborhood would submit to the mob and pay extortion protection money. So Saul Alinsky applied this to politics. And Hillary Clinton did her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. And then, of course, the president was a Saul Alinsky community organizer. And Saul Alinsky, in his book, Rules for Radicals, said, the community organizer's job is to rub raw the resentments of a community, fan the flames of hostility to the point of overt expression. The community organizer must seek out controversy rather than avoid it. For unless there is controversy, the people are not motivated enough to act. And so this is your rent-a-mob. This is creating a crisis. This is stirring up racism and hatred intentionally to have a destabilizing crisis so that the people would say, we need more government. Please, government, federal government, come in and take over our local police departments, take over, and they will, and they'll go house to house collecting guns, and then when the dust settles, everybody will realize, you know what, we just gave up ruling ourselves, and now we're underneath of a centralized power, a king, and it's a strategy that goes all the way back to Machiavelli 500 years ago.
Well, and that phrase that Rahm Emanuel made so famous, never let a crisis go to waste, that fits into this whole thing, doesn't it?
It does. It's a very effective strategy. And you can have a financial crisis, you can have a healthcare crisis, you can have an oil spill crisis, you can have an immigration. You can have all kinds of crises, but the answer is the same. Surrender another piece of your life to the federal government. And notice all these big legislations. Before they're pushed through, the country is whipped up into a crisis state. The healthcare thing. Even though we have the best healthcare in the world, they whipped it up. And said, we got this crisis. We got only a certain amount of days. We got to hurry up and pass this bill. There's a rush. We can find out what's in it after we pass it. And it's like, you know, what's the rush? Well, this created crisis. You know, there's a avian flu and you know, all these diseases or whatever. And as soon as it's passed, it's like whatever the crisis was just sort of went away. It's like, you know, we thought the world was going to end. What happened? You know.
This reminds me, by the way, I'm sorry for interrupting, but 5 days before President Obama was elected in 2008, he said we're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. I remember at the time thinking that is an arrogant statement for anybody to make if they want to be just the regular president of the United States. But it seems like a far sweeping, you know, changes that he had in mind. Beyond what the Constitution, I think, would allow, frankly.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I read lots of history, and you see this concept coming up again and again and again. One was the Japanese took over a part of China, built a railroad, and then there was a railroad explosion. And that was an excuse for Japan to come in and kill 100,000 in Nanking, China, and take over. Then they did research afterwards and had international people coming in and says, what was this railroad explosion? It really wasn't anything. And then you look at what happened in Constantinople, Istanbul. They had the fundamentalist Muslims.
What century? In the 1400s, you mean?
No, this is in the 1950s.
Oh, okay.
1950s, and there were still some Christian neighborhoods in Istanbul, Turkey, left over that had been there for centuries, and that the Muslims wanted to get rid of them. And so they planned to have the home of Ataturk, the founder of Turkey, modern-day Turkey, which was in Greece, they planned on blowing up his house and blaming it on the Christians. The house never got blown up. They weren't able to do it. But the newspaper headlines ran with the story anyway. It whipped the Muslims in Istanbul up into a frenzy, and they killed tens of thousands of Christians and drove out about 50,000 of them, blocked off their neighborhoods, smashed their windows, and, you know, destroyed their churches. But it's this idea that you need some crises to whip people into this situation of frenzy. And, most people are, if the internet went down, I mean, we wouldn't have a way of researching this stuff to find out the other side. So all you got to do is rely on the mainstream media. And of course, in that time, it was just the newspaper. But here we are in America, and we have a president who clearly does not like limitations. He doesn't have time to wait for Congress. He has a pen and a phone. He's going to do it. He wants to do a deal with Iran, and Congress is dragging his feet, and he's like, well, I'm just going to appeal to the UN. But if there's one common denominator amongst his actions, it's taking power away from Congress and concentrating it into the hands of the executive, passing regulations where he's actually enacting law through regulations. rather than waiting for Congress. And,
all right, we have 30 seconds left. Your final comments on especially Ferguson, especially Baltimore. Baltimore scares me because that verdict hasn't come down yet.
Again, a Democrat mayor telling the police to stand down so that the people could have, quote-unquote, space to riot and let billions of dollars of damage be done. And then the fallout is, well, the local police are inadequate. We need to federalize it.
So we should really pray about these things. Bill, thank you so much for joining us. AmericanMinute.com for all the great books and resources from Bill Federer. Thank you, Bill. God bless you.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right. Bye-bye.